This is what the Lord Almighty says. These people say the time is not yet come for the Lord's house to be built. Then the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai. Is it a time for you yourselves to be living in your paneled houses while this house remains in ruin? Well, we're finally into Haggai. And I say finally because after such a long period of looking through the minor prophets prior to the exile, we kept hearing over and over again these pleas from God, these warnings from God, even the violence that was to come for His people, who He said over and over again, "You've got to change your ways. I'm going to completely destroy you. I will let you be sent off. Babylon is going to take you. Assyria is going to take you," for both Israel and Judah. And it was just this over and over again. And finally we get to Haggai, where we don't have to talk about that because it's already happened. So good news, we're not going to be talking about death and destruction, but instead, as we just read, Haggai is going to cover something that we're probably pretty familiar with, but we're really bad at, and that's priorities. Several years ago, a good friend of mine, Cody, he and his wife took a trip to Hawaii. And one of the things he wanted to do while they were there, he said, "I really, really want to take a plane ride, and I want to go out and I want to see all of the island and look around." But as they got there, they got doing a lot of different things, and before long, they had just nearly run out of money. And they were down to their last $20, but he said, "I just want to go see if we can go on a plane ride." And she says, "Well, I want to do this too." So they found a place that had offered plane rides. But because they had so little money, it wasn't the most reputable place, and the plane was pretty old and dilapidated. In fact, it was one of those old open cockpit planes where the pilot would sit in the front and then the passenger would sit in the back. And he said, I want to go on a plane ride." And he says, "Well, it's $20 per person." And he said, "I don't have enough for both of us to go. Can we both ride together?" And the pilot says, "No, I'm sorry. It's really, there's only room for one." And he kept on and on and on. And finally the pilot says, "Okay, I'm just sick of hearing you talking. I'll make a deal with you. Okay, here's the deal. I'll take both of you up at the same time, right? And if you don't say one word the whole plane ride, then I'll only charge you the $20. So they agreed on it. The pilot got in there. He and his wife, they got in the back of there. They squeezed in tight. And the pilot went up. And they start flying around. And the pilot doesn't hear a word. Well, he accepts this as a challenge. And so he starts turning and doing all. And he does a complete loop and flies all around. He doesn't hear one word from Cody. Finally, just amazed, he said, "Man, I gave this guy the best I could. I mean, it's $20, but you know what? It was fun." So they go and they land, and he's, you know, they get on the ground, and he yells back and he says, "Well, you did it, man. I can't believe it. You didn't say one word. It's only going to cost you $20. And Cody hollered back. He goes, "Man, I did do it. I can't believe it. But man, you really tested me when my wife fell out." Well, sometimes we get our priorities out of whack, and this was certainly the case for Israel. They had been carried off into captivity. Judah, we will now call them Israel, but Judah is off in captivity. They've been carried off by the Babylonians. The 70-year period has now ended, and they are beginning to come back to Jerusalem. Not all of them, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in class, but there's a remnant that has come back. In fact, this is going to seem a little confusing because the Old Testament is not given to us in chronological order. In fact, this coincides with a prophet by the name of Ezra. Ezra came back, and do you remember what Ezra did? He helped rebuild the temple. And while they were rebuilding the temple, some Samaritans came in. They would have been the Samaritans at that time. They're the ones who weren't carried off into exile. They stayed, they intermarried, and would later be known as the dogs by the Israelites. But they came up and saw the temple being rebuilt, if you remember this, and they say, ooh, I want to help rebuild the temple. And the Israelites says, you have no part of this because you didn't remain faithful. And so, in the book of Ezra, after the Samaritans learned that they weren't allowed to come be a part of that, they started to be a thorn in the flesh, and they started to make some threats. You remember what the Israelites did? They stopped building. They said, you know what, this is too much. And so 14 years later, after the temple has just been sitting there and the wheelbarrows weren't moving and nobody was stacking rocks again, the word of the Lord comes to Haggai and says, hey, how come you're living in nice houses, but my temple hasn't been touched? Haven't you forgotten your priorities? And I even want to say this, haven't you forgotten your priority? What is it that matters most? Now, we could launch into a long sermon or discourse over priorities and why they're important. But as I started out with saying, I think we all are familiar with priorities. I mean, it's only April. Some of us still are hanging on to those priorities that we set back in January. Well, for the rest of us, there's always next year. But this morning, I don't want to talk just about priorities. I want to talk about how do we actually make them turn into life decisions. Okay, so my entire life, I have always been, the phrase I like to use is aerodynamic. I grew up being a little on the thin side. I didn't like being thin. It wasn't a life choice. I loved to eat people under the table. I could eat anything, but I couldn't gain weight. And the Lord, in His amazing sense of humor, says, just wait. Because someday your metabolism is going to slow down. And it's continued to do that over and over again until I finally landed in the 200 range. And it wasn't a good 200. And I realized this several months ago when I bit down to tie my shoe and I only got one of the loops done. And I realized I had to come up for air. And I would like to say that I would have to hold my breath to tie my shoe, but that didn't even work. I had to completely exhale all I could so I could bend over and try to hurry and get the rabbit around the bush and through the hole and done. And then I could stand up and... And not long after that, I was bathing my daughter, Gracie. I had to do the same thing, and I was bending over, and she looked up at me and she says, Dad, why are you blue? And I thought, okay, that's it. The pants don't fit anymore. I can't tie my shoe. And my daughter thinks I look like Papa Smurf. So I have to do something about that. And so I said, I'm going to make a priority. I'm going to make it where I can fit into my pants without risking, you know, like pulling a muscle, you know. And so I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I weigh 202 pounds. I want to get down to a certain weight. I'm not going to tell you what my weight is because I'm not anywhere close to that. And it doesn't matter. In fact, that became the big problem for me. So about 3 weeks ago, I decided that I was going to start losing weight. And most of you have very advanced, sophisticated ways to diet. I don't. I choose the Neanderthal way of dieting. If I consume less than I burn, then I'm going to lose weight. And so I went from I would like to eat out at a buffet every day to I'm just eating the bare minimum. I've become the most grumpy person in the world. My wife cannot stand it when I diet because all I do is eat salad and walk around and say, I'm starving. I want some food. And then I do the worst thing. This is what drives her the most crazy, is that we have a scale in our house, and I get on this scale way too often, according to her. I mean, I like to do it. At least once a day I get on this scale. Well, for those of you who understand anatomy better than I do, which is every one of you, your body fluctuates in weight up and down, but I don't like that. I want to go in there, eat a salad, step on the scale, and weigh 3 pounds less than I did before lunch. And so I will go and I will get on this scale because I want to evaluate how I'm doing. Look, it's there we go. I'm glad it's not working. Ouch. That's what it says. And I like to use the scale in order to evaluate and find out if I'm actually achieving my goals, if my priorities are remaining in line. Well, there's a big problem with this. All this does is measure the amount of gravity that is forcing my body towards the ground. And there's so much more to being healthy than just simply how much you weigh. There is the size of your waist. There's the body fat indicator. You could look at cholesterol levels. But I don't want to look at any of those things. All I want to do is for that number to be lower than the last time I stepped on the scale. And if it is, I say, good job, way to go. And that's not just a problem with our physical health. It really becomes an issue with our spiritual well-being as well. Because a lot of us, we don't have an easy metric to determine, am I healthy spiritually? I have this priority. I want to do this, so here's how I'm going to do it. And we come up with one way to measure if we are more spiritual than we were the day before. And I don't know what that is. For some of you, it might be, the way I know I'm more spiritual is if I attend church more this week than I did the previous week. That means I'm doing a better job. If I can stay awake for more of Doug's sermon than I did last week, then I'm doing better, and that's a thumbs up. Maybe church attendance is the way that you evaluate your spirituality. I'm here more, so things are better. Some of you, maybe that's not the metric that you use. Maybe you say, you know what? What I need to do is I need to read the Bible more. And the more I read the Bible, the more healthy I will be spiritually. I'm not trying to suggest that you shouldn't read the Bible. But I think it's fair enough to say that there are some people who know the Bible front and backwards, and they're not in a close relationship with God. In fact, Jesus met a few of those people, and do you remember what he called them? He says, you hypocrites. He says, you are like whitewashed tombs. You look good on the outside, but the inside, you're stinky and you're rotten. You look around and say, oh, look at me. I know all the scriptures. I have this little thing on my head. This is what they had. They had these phylacteries based on what we talked about last week. Remember the Shema, hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God, the Lord is one. Worship the Lord with all your heart, soul, and strength. And then he says, these commands I give to you, dot, dot, dot. He says, bind them on your foreheads. And so they took that very literally, and they'd walk around with this little leather pouch called a phylactery. And the more holy they were, the bigger the phylactery was. Or maybe the bigger the phylactery was, the more holy they were. And that's how they evaluated their spirituality, was, I know more scripture than you, and I will bludgeon you over the head with it. And I don't care about anything but following the law, and that makes me spiritual. Some people would say, well, I have my priorities, and the way that I evaluate my spirituality is the amount of time that I spend in prayer. Or maybe it's the amount of good deeds that I do throughout the week. You see, Haggai is not simply about priorities. It's about how you evaluate them. I want to continue on. This is chapter 1 of verse 5. It says, "Now this is what the Lord Almighty says, give careful thought to your ways. You have planted much, but have harvested little. You eat, but you never have enough. You drink, but you never have your fill. You put on clothes, but you're not warm. You earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it. This is what the Lord Almighty says, give careful thought to your ways." It's an opportunity to evaluate. Think about where you are. God says, "My house has been in ruin." You need to think about where your priorities are. You need to evaluate and reevaluate where you are in relationship to me and in relationship to other people. Why do we have the Lord's Supper every Sunday? The correct answer is not because God said we have to. We do it to remember. And we do it to reflect and reevaluate our own selves. Paul himself says, examine yourself. Okay, so we set priorities. We try to find a way to evaluate how we're going. But here's the third thing, and I think maybe one of the most important. Stop making excuses. Stop saying, "Oh, it won't work," or "I can't do it," or the big one, the one that we all love to say is, "I'm too busy." You know what? They never used to say that before. That's relatively new. I mean, listen to this. Verse 9, "You expected much, but see, it turned out to be little. What you brought home, I blew away. Why, declares the Lord Almighty? Because of my house, which remains in ruins, while each of you is busy with his own house." I'm too busy. We say, I can't do it. I've got a lot going on. Our society has crammed busy down our throats. It is the badge that five-year-olds wear when they walk in to kindergarten. And six-year-olds and 16-year-olds and 22-year-olds and 40-year-olds, it is just nearly impossible to locate someone and say, "How are you doing?" And at some point in that conversation, they don't say, "I'm really busy." We all say we're really, really busy. And Satan loves making us feel busy. He can put you in a room by yourself with a phone and convince you that you're busy. It worked for the Israelites, so they thought. There was a priority, but it wasn't God. And God called them to reevaluate their lives. And He said, "Stop making excuses. Make time for me. Stop being so concerned about where you live and what you're doing that you don't put me first." God doesn't accept seconds. It's not who He is. Now, I want to give you a little bit of a teaser, because as much as I love Haggai, I have really, really wrestled with it. Because throughout Haggai, there's this also other issue of God and him showing favor to those who do His will and withholding blessings to those who don't. And I really have wrestled with Haggai. How in the world do we have a God who talks about in the New Testament, I send the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous, but very clearly in Haggai, He says, because you haven't honored Me, I have withheld the rain from you. You planted crops and I didn't allow them to grow. You have these storehouses, but because you didn't honor Me, I'm not going to bless you. That's a really tough one, right? And we're not going to answer this right now because I want to have this discussion in Bible class and I want you to come. And think about why in the world does Haggai promote this type of theology? And can we buy into it? But for this morning, here's what I want you to think about. It's not January, so priorities are already out the window. Reevaluate them. Don't let your spirituality be about how many times you sit down in a purple pew on a Sunday morning. And stop making excuses. There are a lot of reasons why Jesus didn't have to die on that cross. He could have made any number of excuses, and instead He chose you. And this morning, my prayer for you is that you'll choose Him. That you'll continue to look at your life and find ways to praise God wherever you are. This morning, if we can help you out in any way, if you're tired of looking at a scale and feeling like you just haven't quite cut it, I want you to know that there is a God who loves you.